since he's not.
We'll call the Senate Taxes Committee to order. Welcome, members. First on our agenda is Senate File 1, Senator Laurie, Minnesota Insurance Marketplace Act. Senator Laurie, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Glad to be here today with Senate File 1.
Looks like
there's several members here who haven't heard the bill yet, so I will start off with my prefatory remarks. I'll try to keep them brief, and then I'll take you through the bill very briefly, focusing on the portions of the bill that are in the tax jurisdiction. Is that?
Yes, Senator Laurie and members, we are only going to be looking at the parts of this bill that are germane to the Tax Committee, which is the funding for the insurance marketplace. Currently, that's the 3.5% withhold on insurance premiums. So we'll focus in on that.
Do you want
to
step you through the whole bill, though?
Well, why don't you give us just a couple minutes of what you've been working on. I see it's your fourth engrossment. You've had a few stops, so I assume most of the members are somewhat aware of what you're been
working
on.
Yeah, it is. It is the fourth engrossment. We've been working very, very hard on this bill. I've had an open door policy. I always make it clear that I fully understand these are major changes to a large segment of Minnesota's economy and changes that make a difference in people's lives and where they live. So we're taking them very seriously, and at each and every stop we have made substantive and meaningful edits to this bill that have improved the bill. And the end goal is to make this Minnesota insurance marketplace work for industry and consumers. And that's been the guiding principles that I've approached this with all along the way. There's also always a lot of discussion about why we're moving rather quickly on this bill, and I think it's important to address that at each stop as well. And I think it's best done by thinking of why we have to finish this bill by March. And it starts with the fact that in the Affordable Care Act, in the law, the plan sold through the exchange will be covering people's lives on January 1st of 2014. And that's, again, in the law. Unless the Congress and the President decide to change that law, and I don't think anybody, no matter where we are on the spectrum, believes that's a very likely scenario. So that's a hard date. There's also a three-month open enrollment period that is required by law. That backs us up to October 1st in order to do that. That three-month open enrollment. That's when people can actually get on and determine their eligibility for tax credits and do the selection and choose a product that will be covering their lives on January 1st. From that October 1st open enrollment period to the April 1st, which is when this law needs to be enacted, that's the 6 months that's absolutely required for our health carriers to build the products that will populate this exchange and get their products approved and their rate structures approved through the Department of Commerce and actually get these plans ready for purchase. So that moves us right to the March 31st, and that's why we are on a tighter timeline than we're used to in this body. And I think that's just helpful to understand. So with those prefatory comments, I will just
Mr. Chair,
the bill. Senator Laurie, can I just... I'm assuming this is not going to happen, but if all of what you described collapsed and didn't happen, what would be the outcome?
Senator Laurie.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sundrum, that's quite a hypothetical to be trying to accommodate. I mean, if, you know, everything collapses.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just saying that, you know, what would be the outcome if this state did not act in a positive fashion on the exchange?
Senator Laurie, perhaps you could walk through what other states that are not doing at their own exchange are accomplishing.
Okay, so you're saying if we don't get done by March, what happens? Okay, I thought you were talking about at the federal level collapsed. If we don't get done by March, Minnesota would have a federal exchange come in and impose a one-size-fits-all approach to healthcare exchanges. And I think that, you know, Senator Sundrum, you know, from Rochester, you know the value that Minnesota's healthcare industry brings to the people of Minnesota. And we all do. And so we all have a keen interest in making sure that we have a Minnesota-based exchange that really, again, can work for Minnesota's unique healthcare industry and Minnesota consumers, our families and our businesses. And so if we don't get this done by March, a federal one-size-fits-all exchange would come in and need to be operational in Minnesota. And a really critical point about that is the financing mechanism, which is the jurisdiction of this committee, is about the same at the federal level, except that it's more expensive. It's a premium withhold collected by the feds of 3.5% that is not expected to go down ever in the federal projections. In Minnesota's projections, ours is slated to go down significantly in years 2 and 3 and find a stable place somewhere significantly below the 3.5%, depending on enrollment. So we'll have a better Minnesota-based model for the exchange that is cheaper and functions in an environment that is Minnesota's unique role in the healthcare industry.
Thank you, Senator
Lurie.
Thank
you very much.
And members, I would remind you that we're going to focus in on the funding of the health exchange. It's on page 6, starting there at subdivision 2, I believe. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Skoy. My question actually is follows Senator Senjum's point. Senator Lurie, when we met, I believe you said you'd provide that difference. What I thought I heard Senator Senjum saying is, what's the difference between that federal exchange and that this Minnesota exchange? I think that's something important for us to know. And I'm just wondering, have you put that together yet, or have you secured the difference between that federally imposed exchange and what this particular legislation would be? What's the difference?
Yes, Senator Lurie, keep that targeted to the differences in the funding mechanisms between the federal exchange and the state exchange, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the exchange staff is working on that. I did put that request in. As far as the financing mechanism, we'll describe what the state's is. It's, you know, it's a 3.5% withhold in the first year and up to a 3.5% withhold in the second and future years. That is slated in the fiscal note that we have to go down significantly. In the federal exchange, it's 3.5 withhold, very similar structure, without any projections that it would go down. And in fact, some indication that it may even go up. So that's, as far as the financing mechanism, that's the difference between what you have before you and what the federal exchange would be.
And Senator Lurie, did you have any more opening comments that you wanted to make?
Well, I was ready to step through the bill. We're kind of getting to the guts of this committee. If you want to just stay there, that's okay with me. Or I could step you through the bill quickly.
We'll go
not terribly quick to step through the bill because it is complicated, but I'm willing to do it. It's up to the chair.
I think we've started focusing in on the funding. Senator Chamberlain?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Lurie, just a quick note. You said we'll be reducing costs and they'll flatten out, but CBO just came out, incidentally, and they increased the cost estimates by $233 billion over the 10 years. So they're up over $1 trillion now, and they're still going up. And on the backside, it says that our it could triple the cost for many young people looking for insurance. But to the budget, so you're here, we're talking about taxes, we're talking about money to fund this thing, and so we had to start with numbers. And being an accountant myself, we kind of start that way. What do we need to fund this? So we had to start out by, what's the budget? Do you have a cost for the exchange? Do you have a line item for this exchange? We'll go from there. Because we could not really fund something unless we know the cost and what we're funding, correct? Because we require much more of the private sector.
What is your expectation of the cost, Senator Lurie?
Mr. Chair and members, last week the fiscal note for this bill came out, and it's 46 pages. It's rather detailed. The 3.5% withhold produces about, the first year is a little skewed. It's kind of lower, So going with by the fiscal year 16, when it's getting a little bit more stable, the 3.5% withhold produces $39 million. There's also about $10 million of Medicaid allocable costs for that, the services that need to be offered for the Medicaid enrollees in there. So the 3.5% produces about $40 million, and then the Medicaid allocable costs are about $10 million. That's the, for roughly $50 million in fiscal 16.
Thank you, Senator Lord. Mr.
Chair.
Follow-up. We don't have that fiscal note in here, correct? Is that in? Did I miss it?
Public. I don't know what you had distributed in your package.
I was looking for it also. We're going to see if we can copy it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So since I don't have the fiscal note here, does that fiscal note talk about the cost of the exchange? So it's going to cost, what, $100 million to operate this exchange per year? Do we know what that...
Biennium, I guess.
Per biennium. So what is that? How does that break out? I mean, is that for IT? Is that for FTEs? Is it for building? What is that for, Senator?
It's Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, it's for all of that. It's FTEs. It's the IT infrastructure. It's the entire operations
Mr.
of the
Chair?
Exchange. It also covers the navigator function. And I will give members a note. When you do get... the fiscal note, there was a very significant amendment offered in and accepted in the Commerce Committee. This fiscal note was drafted to the bill as introduced, and we totally changed the financing structure for brokers. And so when you get into the broker section, there is nothing collected in the bill for brokers, and I believe that's something on the order of $58 million was in the initial bill to create compensation structures for brokers, and that was changed and taken out of this bill, and we moved them to a compensation structure much more akin to what exists today, where the carriers have contractual relationships with the brokers and pay them directly, and so we took it all out of this bill. So that's just a heads up. When you get the fiscal note, you will see additional costs that are no longer there.
And I just have one quick follow-up. And
Senator Chamberlain.
So on this fiscal note, will we see in there a breakout?
Yes.
This will be for FTEs. This will be for the management of that sort of stuff. And then we'll know how much that costs?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we're getting the fiscal note. Maybe while we wait for that, we could hear some of the testimony. Then when we have the fiscal note in our hand, we will return to questions about costs. Is that okay with the members? Okay with you, Senator Lurie?
Absolutely.
Okay. We have a list of folks that want to testify on Senate File 1. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Hickey, President of the Insurance Federation and National Federation of Independent Businesses.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Resta.
And we are going to ask them to speak only to the financing, not to any of the policy in here. That's not our purview.
Yes, please keep your comments to the financing of the exchange, please. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota.
Could you pull the mic in a bit, please?
Yeah.
Make sure
okay.
You say your name for the tape.
Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. And Mr. Chairman and committee members, first I want to thank Senator Lurie. I did have a chance to meet with him a couple of days ago, specifically on the operations funding issue, and got an important clarification for me on a point that I had made at the Senate Commerce Committee. So I thank Senator Lurie for that. Just 20 seconds on that. That relates to the issue of how this 3.5% charge or withhold assessment, how that relates to the federal Affordable Care Act's minimum loss ratios. It's a very important point because the federal law establishes an 80% loss ratio, and that's applicable to all states, and that's the payout that must be made of each premium dollar collected. So we have an 80% loss ratio on individual small group, 85 on large group. And Senator Lurie updated me on an important clarification that the 3.5% is a deduction from premium before the application of the loss ratio. So with that clarification, that actually takes that loss ratio point off the table from my perspective, and obviously we have to comply with the federal loss ratio. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll cede back the rest of my time except to say this, and as Senator Lurie knows, and as we testified at Commerce, I just urge the committee to consider a broader funding base than what's in the bill right now, which is we have a very shrinking, small, fully insured commercial health insurance market. That's individual policies and small group. And we just think that a broader funding base is a more equitable way to fund the operations of the exchange, and just urge the committee, I know Senator Lurie is aware of it, urge the committee to consider a fairer funding formula than what's in the bill right now. So with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Hickey.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mike Hickey with National Federation of Independent Business, and I'm happy to keep it brief. This is about the eighth time around on this, and Senator Lurie may be tired of hearing from all of us, and I think we're getting tired of testifying. Yeah. But the process here is certainly thorough, if anything else. But as you know, National Federation of Independent Business is the state's largest business group in terms of entities. We have 13,000 members across the state and a significant member base in every district, and I think probably the group most affected by this assessment. We've been very concerned about it from the beginning, and there's been some confusion about it. I think it's clear now it is going to be passed through to buyers, and it's the last thing we need to do. And we're just very concerned that we're going to make the burden tougher. We're going to make the weight heavier on people, and most of our members, I don't think, are going to end up in this exchange, at least any time soon. I mean, who knows, 10, 20 years from now. But the estimates are 25% of the population, a lot of that being Medicaid people, and some 10 to 30%. And so the vast majority aren't going to be in the exchange in the beginning. And if this assessment ends up falling on them, I know you've seen this chart, and the comparisons are really getting concerning. This includes the 3.5%, assuming it's going to be passed through, but 12%, 13% burden on small employers and individuals, and only a 2.8% on large self-insured companies. The unfairness is just unbelievable. And so we're stacking this bar graph up. We're making the weight heavier on the backs of small employers, and this is just a really bad result, and especially for those who aren't going to be in the exchange to have to pay yet another new assessment due to this. And so we just urge you to find another funding source. Some have speculated trying to tap the Health Care Access Fund's large surplus for a certain amount of time. That would get us 3-4 years down the road. The federal government's financing the exchange in its first year. And I urge you to find another funding source, because this is the burden we shouldn't put on small business.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Questions, members? Thank you, gentlemen. Ms. Schmidt? Johnson, Johansson from the Chamber, and Minnesota Council of Health Plans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Commit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. My members include Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Health Partners, Medica, Metropolitan Health Plan, Preferred One, Sanford Health, and UCare. The Council has been working closely with Senator Lurie, and we appreciate all of his hard work on this bill. The Council of Health Plans continues to support universal coverage for all Minnesotans, and we have been a consistent supporter of a state-based health insurance exchange. That said, we are very concerned about two issues. First, the funding mechanism included in Senate File 1, and second, the high cost of operating the exchange. With respect to our first concern, Senate File 1 imposes a 3.5% premium withhold, or premium tax, which will be collected from the health insurance premiums on products through the exchange. We strongly oppose this tax because it is unfair. This tax will fall disproportionately on individuals and small employers only, regardless of whether or not they use the exchange. In Senate File 1, the premium tax is built into the cost of health insurance as an administrative expense or withhold on individual and small group premiums. State and federal regulations require a health insurer to blend administrative expenses among their products both inside and outside the exchange. Therefore, the cost of this tax is imposed on both individuals and small groups who use the exchange, as well as individuals and small groups who choose not to use the exchange. Under this bill, only individuals in small groups will be required to pay for the exchange, even if they don't use it. That's because most Minnesotans receive their health coverage through a large employer. These larger employers typically self-insure their employees and are exempt from paying any state premium taxes and assessments. And just for some background, about 40% of Minnesota's population is covered through a self-insured or self-funded employee benefit plan. There are about a little less than 25% of Minnesotans are covered through a fully insured plan. Insurance premium taxes are unfair because they're applied only on the coverage purchased in the fully insured market. And as a result, coverage for individuals and small employers is much more expensive than coverage provided by the large self-insured employers. And I think you should have a copy of a bar chart in your packet that shows employers pay these taxes. It shows that this is essentially the fully insured market, and there are two different types of products that are sold in the fully insured market, a typical indemnity policy or an HMO policy, and they have a much higher tax burden because they are regulated by the state. Therefore, the state can impose state taxes as well as state assessments, et cetera. The fully insured market is exempt from paying state taxes and assessments because they're protected under the federal ERISA law. And so as we continue to add more taxes, and you can see in this bar chart the sections of the bar that are highlighted with white lines reflect the new taxes that we see coming, including the 3.5% premium tax that is part of this bill. So you can see how that will grow. The Health Insurance Exchange Advisory Task Force, which worked to develop the recommendations for this legislation, created a financing work group to study how best to fund the operations of the exchange. And that group reviewed multiple options, including user fees, a portion of the premium on the fully insured market, both inside and outside the exchange, a portion of the premium on the fully insured market in the exchange only, a broad-based health care tax, another broad-based health care tax like a sin tax, an appropriation from the general fund, or an appropriation from the health care access fund. And in the end, the work group members could not agree on a funding mechanism for the exchange. However, they did agree that multiple options should be used to fund the exchange. There was also consensus that any premium tax or withhold should be a funding mechanism of last resort, not the sole and primary funding source. In their final report, the workgroup highlighted the problems with the funding mechanism found in Senate File 1, including lack of transparency. The cost of the exchange would be invisible from the individuals and small groups paying for it. 2, inequity. The cost of the exchange would be borne by a small number of Minnesotans. It would not align with the groups that directly or indirectly benefit from the exchange. Instability. Funding is tied to and dependent on enrollment estimates, which are highly unpredictable, especially in the first few years of the exchange. And 4, anti-competitiveness. A carrier could decide to stay out of the exchange to avoid the tax, thereby reducing competition in the exchange and creating anti-selection issues for the exchange. Members of the committee, we view the exchange as a public good for the benefit of the entire state. As such, we believe funding for the exchange should be spread as broadly as possible. The funding mechanism should be fair, transparent, and accountable to the legislature. The Council of Health Plans urges you, as policymakers, to examine this funding mechanism closely. We believe this mechanism does not stand up to the principles of what makes a good and fair tax. Our second major concern is about the overall size and cost of operating the exchange. Staff from the exchange testified that they are spending $165 million to build the exchange, but none of that money is being used to provide health care for Minnesotans. Once built, the annual cost to operate the exchange is estimated to be as much as $50 to $60 million. Again, none of this money will be used to pay for health care services, nor will this money be used to provide financial assistance to buy insurance. The $50 to $60 million is just the administrative cost to operate the exchange. We urge you to carefully examine why it costs so much to set up a web portal marketplace to be used by individuals, small employers, and the state Medicaid population. We should operate an exchange that is as lean and efficient as possible, because at the end of the day, these costs will be borne by Minnesotans. Our concerns with the exchange funding arise from our desire to build an exchange that will work for Minnesota. The bill before us today does not meet those goals, and we cannot support the bill in its current form. And I just want to briefly comment about a question that Senator Carla Nelson asked, the differences between the federal exchange funding mechanism and the Minnesota exchange, or the mechanism that's included in this bill. And it is accurate that the funding mechanism in the federal exchange is a 3.5% withhold, period. What's different about the Minnesota exchange and this legislation is that we get a chance to create the Minnesota exchange ourselves and to look at alternative funding mechanisms to make it as fair as possible so it works for the benefit of the entire state. So we think that there is more work to be done to find a broader-based funding mechanism that serves all of us. So, Mr. Chairman, we remain committed to working on modifying Senate File 1 so that an exchange can be created that will work for all of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Kmet. And part of your testimony, I think Senator Lurie has another stop in the Finance Committee, and hopefully you will repeat some of the testimony on the cost in that committee. Ms. Johansson.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Kate Johansson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and its 2,400 employee members, 80% of which are small businesses eligible to participate in a Minnesota health insurance exchange. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate File 1 today, and thanks also very much to Senator Lurie for carrying this complicated and very important legislation. Thanks also to him for his open door and collaborative style in addressing stakeholder concerns with respect to the bill. The Minnesota Chamber has long supported the legislative creation of a state health insurance exchange where consumers can shop for health coverage that meets their individual needs and resources. While we do have concerns about the bill in its current form, we look forward to keep working with authors and others interested to achieve those goals. Per the Chair's request, I'll tailor my comments today simply to the 3.5% withhold finance mechanism. First, I would state that there is some controversy over what we call this mechanism. Some call it a withhold, others an assessment, others a tax. But working for small businesses, they don't care what you call something. They care what it does. And the first concern that the Chamber would have is in relationship to the impact of this fee, assessment, tax, whatever you call it, on small business owners. The effect here is simple. This 3.5% withhold will increase premiums for those who purchase health coverage through the fully insured markets. That's small businesses and consumers, and everybody who purchases in that market, regardless of whether they're purchasing through the exchange, will feel the premium increase from this tax or withhold because the ACA requires that products inside and outside the exchange be similarly priced. Thus, whether you buy from the exchange or not, you will be paying for the impact of financing the exchange at a state level. The concern, of course, is that this makes insurance less affordable for the group that already pays the most for it and is most vulnerable to losing coverage if premiums increase to a level that is unsustainable for small businesses to provide insurance for their employees. As Ms. Kmet noted, that chart shows the quadruple whammy with which small businesses are being hit, a 2% premium increase at the federal level, a 3% MCHA assessment, regular costs from state regulations, and as well as regular health care inflation. We don't want to increase that quadruple whammy to a quintuple whammy. So first, that would summarize our policy concerns, simply that we're making insurance less affordable for the group that is already struggling the most to afford it. Second, as Ms. Kmet noted, the task force did recommend a much different finance mechanism, and perhaps I feel maternalistic about this because I did serve on the finance work group. That work group suggested a broad-based source that did not punish or target one specific group and instead suggested perhaps a mixture of 8 potential financing mechanisms. Of course, this is one finance mechanism that is narrowly tailored, and we would hope that this committee and the legislature generally would consider looking more at the options provided by the task force, or at least the principles that were provided by the task force. With that in mind, I want to offer a few constructive suggestions for how to move forward on the issue. First, I think it's appropriate to review and justify the expenses that are contained in the fiscal note. Having served on the finance work group, we received Wakely Consulting, which is a group out of Massachusetts, information that estimated costs for the exchange in 2016 between $40 and $60 million. The fiscal note came in at $62 million. And as Senator Lori noted, that may change pending subsequent engrossments of the bill. But still, that's bloated compared to the range that we were originally looking at and anticipating. And I think it's worthwhile to go through that and come up with a lean, reasonable target before determining how to apply revenue to potentially meet that target. Second, I think it's important to perhaps delay this conversation. This withhold starts on January 1st of 2014, and we already have federal funding to operate the exchange in 2014. The federal law does not require that the state have a self-sustaining exchange until 2015. So there is more time for us to have a conversation about how to design a finance mechanism that is most appropriate for a Minnesota-based exchange. And with that, I would also say that some of the issues that might be helpful for further discussion would be seeking out duplications, because the new exchange will duplicate some functions that we already perform in state and local government. I would also say that language in the bill, which is appreciated, that empowers the board to seek outside sources through advertising and philanthropic donations, might be made mandatory, and we should see how much money we can generate in 2014 from those resources before asking taxpayers, especially those who are in the fully insured market, to pay more for insurance to finance the exchange. So in conclusion, I know that this is an ongoing issue, and I hope that the Chamber will be available to serve as a resource to you in any capacity in which we can be helpful. We do want an exchange that works, but we also want one that is fiscally responsible and doesn't make insurance less affordable for small businesses and their employees. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Ms. Johansson. Senator Chamberlain?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick questions. So we still don't know what the cost is first. I want to go back to the cost, Senator Lori.
Well, Senator Chamberlain, the fiscal note is on its way. So
well,
you'll have that shortly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I'm trying to clarify something. I'm the detail here. We're talking, 30,000-foot level here. We have a couple different numbers here. Some people may not think 2 or 3 or 5 million is a lot, but we had 40 to 60, 58, 55, 40, and 62, I think I heard as well. Quickly, first is, do we really know what that number is? And secondly, my first bite of the apple here, why was the 3.5% premium tax chosen and not the recommendations of the task force?
Senator Lori.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, I think that it was made clear in the testimony that the task force didn't come up with a recommendation. They had several options on the table, and subsequent to the task force, the feds came up with what the federal exchange would look like, and it was kind of a game changer when they just demonstrated clearly that they were going to have a 3.5% withhold. And in fact, Minnesota's not alone in going there. I did a review of what other states that are implementing exchanges are doing. California, Connecticut, D.C., Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, Nevada, Oregon, West Virginia, and Washington are all either already have established this mechanism or are looking very seriously at this as the mechanism for funding their exchange operations. It actually is, a pretty good, and there's good arguments to be made. I'm not trying to say that this is the end-all and be-all, but this is a stable and adequate and self-sustaining, which is a requirement of the ACA, self-sustaining funding mechanism for the exchange. One of the other things that I think is of value in this is that it does provide the exchange with real incentives to stay lean and efficient, because they're going to be held accountable for any premium increases that they wind up putting on these policies. And I think that's going to be a very effective incentive, whereas if we go with some other mechanisms, we may lose that mechanism to create those incentives. Another advantage of this is that 70% of the fully insured market will be in the exchange with federal tax subsidies and premium supports and cost-sharing supports, these subsidies will be a part of that and eligible to get the federal funding to support that. So, I mean, in a very real sense, we'd still be using federal funds in that mechanism because for a large piece of this. And that's another fairly distinct advantage. So, I mean, there's arguments to be made. The task force didn't come up with a recommendation. We've learned a lot since the financing task force finished their work and submitted what they did submit, and that's kind of just in a nutshell some of the factors that went into our utilizing of this mechanism for introduction of the bill and bringing us here before you today.
Thank you, Senator Lurie. And Senator Chamberlain, in the discussions I've had about this, one of the things that is a positive from this mechanism is it does have skin in the game for the plans. And so there is some benefit to utilizing this in that regard. Final question, Senator Chamberlain? Oh, you're done? Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a brief question for Ms. Johansson. We're all concerned about the cost and making health care more costly, which is, I think, driven here. My question is, I thought I heard you say that the Minnesota Insurance Market Exchange will be duplicating some things that we're doing in other places, and so it might be redundant and additional cost, and you might not have it today, but at some point, could we get a list of those duplications that we should cease to avoid?
Ms. Johansson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, yes, I'm happy to seek out that information. That was actually a point that I had raised continuously throughout our finance work group discussions as well, so hopefully I'll be able to circle back with that group and build on the information that was assembled previously.
Thank you.
And Ms. Johansson, I would encourage you to supply all the members of that information. I think that's interesting.
Mr. Chair, that's my pleasure.
Anything else? Senator Senjum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for, is it Ms. Komet, the health plan? And it sort of gets to, you know, if I were a member of the exchange, I bought into the exchange and I paid my 3.5% premium, what would I get? And most specifically, what I'm wondering about, and maybe it's not determined yet, but if I was a member of this exchange and if I lived in La Crescent, could I go to the Gunderson Clinic? If I lived in Laverne, could I go to the Sanford Clinic? If I lived in Hawley, could I go to the Fargo Clinic? In other words, will the exchange allow Minnesota people to seek health care out of state?
Senator Senjum, I think it's a good question, but it's straying a little bit from the funding. But Senator Lurie,
I paid my 3.5% premium.
Yeah, okay. Ms. Komet?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Senjum, I'll try to be really brief. There isn't an easy answer because we are still waiting for federal guidance as to exactly what the essential health benefit set should look like. And once the health plans know what that benefit set is, they will be able to create products for selling through the exchange. Most likely, there will be products that include a large provider network to include Gunderson Health Clinic, et cetera. But we don't know for sure, but I think that because those are popular products today, most likely plans will attempt to meet the consumer's demands for products like that.
That's all I need. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. And Mr. Renner and Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chair and members,
Renner.
Name is Dave Renner, representing the Minnesota Medical Association. We are a professional association representing over 10,000 physicians and physicians in training throughout Minnesota. We are here today in support of Senate File 1 and the Minnesota Base Exchange, and in particular, the MMA also supports the proposed financing mechanism that's currently in the bill. And I'll try to go through the three reasons why we are supportive of this. First, we would argue that we believe this financing mechanism is fair. It is linked directly to those that stand to benefit the most from the exchange, the insurers and health plans, that will see increased enrollment by virtue of selling products on the exchange. The proposed financing mechanism is linked directly to the exchange users and its primary beneficiaries. Second, this financing mechanism is reasonable because it will be offset by insurer savings elsewhere. Insurance company marketing efforts currently devoted to reaching individuals and small employers are expected to be dramatically reduced as the exchange is launched. Many of the individuals and small employers in need of coverage will come directly to the exchange as a result of the exchange marketing activities, and also in order to access the federal tax credits that are available to purchase through the exchange. Asking insurers to support the collective marketing efforts of the exchange makes complete sense in our minds. Additionally, insurance costs will be reduced in other areas as we fully implement the reforms under the ACA. Specifically, based on what the legislature has done here, eventually the 1% premium tax, HMO premium tax, that is listed in the chart that the council provided, is scheduled to go away. In addition, the MCHA assessment, which is projected to be an additional 3%, is also scheduled to eventually go away. Third and finally, we think this financing mechanism has been well vetted. As Senator Lorry has mentioned, this is the leading mechanism being deployed across the country. The federal exchange is looking at using premium charges, as have the number of states that Senator Lorry had mentioned earlier. Finally, I just want to mention that we have heard a discussion, and it was suggested earlier even today, that there are some who are interested in using the Health Care Access Fund for a potential alternative funding source, and as the MMA vigorously opposed to that idea. The primary revenue for those sources, for the Health Care Access Fund, namely the 2% provider tax, the 1% premium tax, has been repealed according to what you all did in 2011. It is scheduled to be repealed following 2019. And the MMA is hoping that the legislature maintains its commitment to that. But even separate from that, the Health Care Access Fund was really designed to help provide coverage for low-income Minnesotans. And we believe that using that to help run the exchange, which will be primarily a benefit to insurers and health plans, we do not believe is within the principles of tax fairness. So for those reasons, the MMA does support passage of Senate File 1 and does support the financing mechanism that's in the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Renner. Senator Berglund, certainly good to see you. Welcome back to Room 15.
Chairman Skoy and members of the committee, it's nice to see you today, too. I'm honored to be here today to support Senate File 1. Hennepin County believes that Minnesota should have our own state exchange as we move forward. We believe that we should be addressing the issues that may come up as we implement it by addressing them at the local level. We believe the financing mechanism proposed in this bill by the Dayton administration is a good one for several reasons. First, Senate File 1 proposes the same funding source that will be used nationally, and you've already heard that. As the bill indicates, we anticipate the phase-out of the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, and this will mean the current MSHA assessment will also be phased out. This means that there is the ability to use the premium add-on without affecting premiums for those who have been paying the MSHA assessment. Third, we really don't know what the number of uninsured will remain after the exchange is created. Those who cannot afford to purchase insurance under the exchange still need to have support. We know the recent federal ruling that the 9.5 affordability threshold for small businesses or other businesses that are providing insurance applies only to the employee and not their dependents. So we know that there will be children and spouses who are left uninsured. We do not know if we can obtain an extension to our federal Minnesota Care waiver at this time. We did hear just last night that the federal government will be ready to implement the basic health plan in 2015. that leaves 2014 in a lot of doubt for many uninsured Minnesotans. It is possible that the Health Care Access Fund will be needed to continue to subsidize these uninsured and underinsured individuals and families as we move forward. At Hennepin County, we know that oftentimes, most of the time, the uninsured get their care from Hennepin County Medical Center providers. Based on the experience of Massachusetts, we believe there will be fewer providers who will be willing to serve the uninsured in the future because they will believe everyone has access to affordable coverage. This means a possible heavier burden for property taxpayers in Hennepin County. We support Governor Dayton's efforts to avoid this by making sure the Department of Human Services has the resources needed to continue to meet the needs of those left uninsured or underinsured after reform takes place. And finally, due to the limit on out-of-pocket premiums for individuals obtaining coverage through the exchange who are under 400% of the federal poverty guideline, the federal government is really providing most of this funding. And when I was here and we had budget difficulties, if we could find a way for somebody else to help pay for something, we usually did that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for listening to our concerns, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Questions, members? Senator Chamberlain?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick things. One on the fiscal note. Senator Lori, I'm looking at this, the expenditures. So I'm assuming, can you show me on here where the annual cost for operating the exchange is? I believe I found it, but I would just.
It's on page 19.
Senator Lori.
It's on page 19, Mr. Chair. Chamberlain is really the summary. And the numbers I had been quoting are fiscal year 16 there. Towards the bottom is the premium withhold of $39.4 million that I was talking about. That's what the 3.5 would produce in that fiscal year. All of the fiscal years are there, but that's when we're attaining a little bit of stability. You'll see.
Senator Lori, is that the line premium withhold table 21?
Yes, premium withhold table 21, the 39.4. That's what the 3.5%, well, the up to 3.5% produces. I believe that it's actually, if you look at above that, in calendar year 15, it's 2.25 is what's estimated to be needed. And in calendar year 16, it's 2% that's needed. And so it's a blend of those two. So it'd probably be about 2.1 on the medium. Yeah, and I'm using the medium enrollment scenario as well when I look at that. There's a high scenario and a low scenario. This is a very detailed and complicated fiscal note. I will cede that point readily, but that's kind of what I go to is the medium enrollment scenario. I think that's a reasonable place to go. And the projection is that, you know, by the end of fiscal year 16, we'll be down to a 2% withhold. In Minnesota, and that's the mechanism allows for up to a 3.5. Members often get stuck on that figure that's in the statute, but there really are incentives built into this to drive the cost down. So that's where you'll find the.
Right. Mr. Chair, just two quick
numbers I was citing.
Before we go back to you, Senator Chamberlain, are there questions for the testifiers?
I do have one.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain.
So I'll first a final one for Senator Lori, then for Senator Berglund. So when I look on page one here, net expenditures, health insurance exchange, I'm looking on page one, you know, just at the top there under expenditures. What does that tell me?
Senator Lori.
You know, incredibly detailed. Well, net expenditures. That's what I thought. The net expenditures includes that broker's piece that's been taken out, which is over half of the money. I mean, it was a really big piece
by the time you
get to 2016.
And thank you, Senator
Chamberlain. Chamberlain.
And one last one. Senator Berglund, the idea of the exchange, I guess in a perfect world, everybody would be covered. So I thought the idea of the exchange was that it would allow anybody to go on there and purchase affordable health care, and that we would no longer have uninsured people in the state of Minnesota that could not afford health care, would not access health care for whatever reason. But in your testimony, and testimony, I guess, previous to this, where people are saying that there's still going to be uninsured people out there, and Minnesota is still going to need money outside of the exchange and outside of the ACA effort to insure people that apparently aren't going to the exchange, and I thought that was the purpose. Could you help explain that piece?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Berglund.
Senator Chamberlain, I wasn't part of writing the Federal Act. I can only tell you that it's less than perfect. I'm sure many times the legislature passes legislation that's less than perfect also. And I have, when I was here, seen people come back in future years and improve. I am hoping the federal government will, in the future at some time, improve this. It is an incredible step forward in terms of making health care insurance affordable for many people. But as I said, there will be some people that are left out. And we, as a state of Minnesota, need to make sure that we're in a position not to take away from those people the tools that we have in place today that help them achieve affordable health care as well.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, to put some context to it, we have about 500,000 uninsured in the state of Minnesota roughly today. And by 2016, the estimates are that 300,000 of those people will be covered by policies that they found using the exchange. That's without a BHP. We're working very hard on establishing a basic health plan for the state of Minnesota. And with that, the estimates are that if we do that well, we could gain another 40,000, bringing the total uninsured down to from 500,000 down to 160,000 would be our goal. So, yes, there would still be some left, but this is an incredibly effective tool to really begin to address the needs in our state.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No more questions. We're going to move on. Mr. Varkel and Ms. Wessel. Mr. Varkel, welcome to Tax Committee.
Chairman Skoy, members of the committee, my name is Rick Varkel. I'm the political director for SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. We represent about 15,000 healthcare workers across the state who work in hospitals, clinics, and nursing homes. We strongly support the financing mechanism included in Senate File 1, a premium withhold. The funding mechanism for the exchange operation should adhere to the following principles. Exchange operations should be financed by entities that will realize the greatest financial benefit from the exchange. The funding source should not hurt low or middle income families in Minnesota. And funding must be reliable, stable, not subject to interruption by political gridlock, hostage taking, or economic downturns. The premium withhold meets these criteria. Insurance carriers participating in the exchange will realize very substantial financial benefits, including 290,000 previously uninsured people brought into the market, direct access to about $3.3 billion in premium revenues, and an estimated $2.1 billion in taxpayer subsidies to insurance companies. Second, the 3.5 assessment shouldn't raise premiums by 3.5% and should not fall that heavily on consumers. Insurers will save on existing administrative and marketing costs for plans because the exchange takes on much of that burden from them. In addition, their job of selling insurance just got enormously easier due to the fact that their product is now individually mandated and subsidized by the federal government. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, the withhold mechanism is stable because operations are financed directly by exchange enrollment. It can't be destabilized by external factors like changes in political leadership or shifting fiscal priorities. More importantly, and if one thing I say sticks with you, I hope it's this, in an economic downturn, funding would rise automatically. I can't think of any other funding mechanism like that. The withhold would increase as unemployed people or those whose employer dropped coverage enrolled in the exchange. Many of you are far too familiar with the dilemma of a state budget in an economic downturn. Just as a slowdown increases demand for public programs, the revenue that funds those programs declines. If funded through a withhold, the exchange will not come to you in a downturn asking for a tax increase just to maintain existing services. In fact, its revenues will automatically rise to meet higher demand. We strongly oppose certain options that have been sort of discussed out there in the ether. A user fee or any other would not be considered for purposes of calculating advanced premium tax credits, and thus would not get federal subsidies, a point Senator Berglund touched on. Funding for the Health Care Access Fund, including the provider tax, is already used to fund Minnesota Care, a highly successful program. Especially given recent news that opens a real window of opportunity to preserve Minnesota Care, we need to protect every available dollar that could be used to bridge us to the new Minnesota Care program. Finally, I'll just end with this. The withhold mechanism ensures that out-of-state carriers don't get a free ride on the exchange. The ACA requires that at least two multi-state plans be allowed to offer products on the exchange. Any funding mechanism besides a direct assessment on carriers enables those out-of-state providers free access to the Minnesota health insurance market. Any Minnesota-specific fee or tax will leave them untouched. There's a lot of divisions in this room, Democrats versus Republicans, proponents of the Affordable Care Act versus opponents of the Affordable Care Act. I hope we could all unite around making sure that we stick it to the out-of-state folks.
Thank you. Ms. Wessel.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christina Wessel, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Minnesota Budget Project. We are an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and we provide research, analysis, and advocacy on tax and budget issues that impact low and moderate income families. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of Senate File 1, and particularly to express our support for the premium withhold as a funding source for the health insurance exchange. This funding source focuses the cost of the exchange on those who benefit most. Over the last year, the Finance Workgroup of the Health Insurance Exchange Task Force studied the question of how to pay for the operation of a state-based exchange. One of their core principles was that as much as possible, the responsibility for funding the exchange should be proportionate to the benefit received. And it's clear that those who will benefit most from the exchange are the nearly 1.3 million Minnesotans expected to enroll in the exchange, and the insurance carriers that will be selling policies to those individuals and will benefit from the $1 to $2 billion in premiums that will be sold through the exchange by 2015. The premium withhold is the appropriate mechanism for the exchange because it asks those who receive insurance and those who sell insurance through the exchange to pay for its administrative costs. We know the exchange will bring added value to the market by helping more than 300,000 currently uninsured Minnesotans access health insurance, and helping 250,000 Minnesotans afford insurance through federal tax credits. Insurance carriers will benefit from that added business, and they should help pay for an exchange that is created to bring business to their doorstep. I've said that individuals and small businesses purchasing their insurance through the exchange will also benefit, and undoubtedly, health insurers will pass some of the cost of the withhold onto consumers. But the premium withhold should be included in the medical loss ratio calculation, not as a percentage that is added on top of the premium, because that passes the cost totally onto the consumer. The premium withhold is the best funding source for the exchange because it recognizes that insurance carriers and some consumers will experience substantially more value from the exchange than the rest of the public. I'd like to make a few comments on some of the other options that this committee may be considering, and I've been thrown out there before. We have concerns about an alternative funding mechanisms that have too narrow of a base and focus the burden for funding the exchange on those who may not directly benefit. For example, the tobacco tax has been mentioned as a funding source. However, to ask Minnesota smokers to fund the entire health insurance exchange is also not a fair solution. And this is also a very regressive funding source. And finally, we oppose funding the exchange from the Health Care Access Fund because it is not a sustainable source of funding. The Health Care Access Fund raises revenues from healthcare users through the provider tax in order to provide health insurance for working Minnesotans who could not access affordable insurance through their employer. Diverting these funds to the exchange puts the goal of the affordable health care for more Minnesotans at risk. The Health Care Access Fund is needed to fund Minnesota care, as many have already talked about today. Meaningful private insurance in the exchange, even with the help of federal premium tax credits, will still not be as affordable as what Minnesota care offers today. Although the federal government is working with Minnesota to find a solution that will continue to bring federal dollars to help pay for Minnesota care, it is not yet clear how much we will get. And the first priority for these resources is for Minnesota care, making it an unreliable source of funding for the exchange. In conclusion, we support the premium withhold mechanism as the sole source of funding for the exchange. However, if there is an interest in other revenues, we urge members then to use more than one funding mechanism, but maintain the premium withhold as the primary source. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name, sir.
Rick Varco.
Mr. Fargo?
Varco with a V.
Okay.
As in Victor.
Thank you. Will members of SEIU, your members, will they be purchasing on the exchange?
Mr. Varco.
Chairman Skoy, Senator Chamberlain. That's unclear. We have heard some talk that the nursing home industry in particular, where we've got about 3,000 members, might think about moving a substantial number of folks into the exchange. We've had some employers approach us about that option, but I would say that's pretty speculative. I think one of the factors there is that a lot of them hover around that 100-employee mark, so they're waiting to find out exactly where the cut for these small employers is going to be.
Thank you.
We have
I'm sorry,
more
go ahead. I'm finished,
okay,
Chair.
Thank you. Senator Sanjum.
And Mr. Varco, I just wanted to follow up on the, and I'll stand corrected, stick it to the out-of-state health plans? Is that
I was,
and I'm not, I'm kind of serious about,
yeah.
I think you said that, but you wouldn't stick it to the out-of-state patients that are part of health plans that want to come to Minnesota for health care, right?
Mr. Varco, we understand it.
Chairman Skoy, yeah. Senator Senjum, I'll just add, I don't think we're actually sticking it to them. It's treating them the same way we treat Minnesota companies. I just don't want to give them an unfair advantage where the funding for the exchange would be borne primarily by Minnesotans and out-of-staters would be able to participate to sell insurance in the exchange without having to pay for the cost of the exchange.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you both. Ms. Banks and Ms. Doyle. Whoever would like to start, Ms. Banks.
Perhaps I'll start if that's okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Liz Doyle, and I'm the Associate Director of Take Action Minnesota. Take Action Minnesota works, among other issues, on expanding access to affordable health coverage in the state. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify, and to Senator Lori for all of his work on this very challenging issue. Several of my comments have actually been made by previous testifiers, so I will just briefly say that I would reiterate the points made by Mr. Renner, Ms. Wessel, and Mr. Varco about the importance of linking the funding mechanism, as the premium withhold currently does, to the entities that have the most to gain off the health insurance exchange, and those specifically being health insurance carriers that will be able to both benefit from the 300,000 uninsured walking into this market, in addition to the $1 to $2 billion of taxpayer-financed subsidies that are going to be available to everyone under 400% of the federal poverty level. I would also echo the importance of the exchange being financed in a way that is self-sustaining. That is clearly the intent of the federal law, is to have exchanges finance be self-sustaining in their financing. That is how they are being designed in other states. We would encourage you to consider the same for Minnesota. And then finally, I would just reiterate the importance of protecting low-income Minnesotans in particular from having to shoulder the burden of the cost of the health insurance exchange. Then I'd like to turn it over, if I may, to Ms. Banks, who wants to address in particular the potential funding of the exchange through the Health Care Access Fund.
Good morning, members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Banks.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me testify today. My name is Jessica Banks, and I live here in St. Paul. My husband, my two young sons, and I are currently enrolled in Minnesota Care, and I'm here to ask you to ensure that the dedicated Health Care Access Fund for Minnesota Care program is not used to fund the exchange. Health insurance companies stand to gain up to $3 billion in new revenue from our new exchange, so it's only fair that they fund the exchange with the moderate 3.5% of their exchange earnings. This is, by the way, common practice for other states. Considering all the revenue from thousands of new customers insurance companies will get from the exchange, it is unfair, inequitable, and unnecessary to disinvest in Minnesota Care and ask Minnesota families to pay for it. I'm opposed to shifting the Health Care Access Fund away from Minnesota Care because I know from personal experience that access to affordable and quality health care is the difference between life and death. When we moved to Minnesota 2.5 years ago, neither mine nor my husband's jobs provided health care coverage, and we were below 200% of federal poverty. Thankfully, we qualified for Minnesota Care coverage. A year ago this month, my son Connor, who has Asperger's syndrome, went through a suicidal crisis. Autistics like him, and like me for what it's worth, find rapid, unpredictable change overwhelming. Connor's baseline of everyday highs and lows crashed and became erratic and violent. He thought, at only 9 years old, that death was the only way out of his sensory and emotional torture. Our Minnesota Care program covered his recovery 100%. The relief in knowing that there was a reliable stream of financed medical care during this crisis gave our family the much-needed ability to heal together and to help Connor recover. I shudder at the thought of what would have happened if we didn't have access to Connor's treatment. We celebrated his 10th birthday this past summer, and it was a milestone I honestly doubted at times that we would achieve. Today, he's a happy, brilliant, thriving child like every parent hopes for. My husband recently got a better-paying job with a good health care plan for our whole family, so we will be moving off of Minnesota Care. But I will always be grateful that Minnesota Care was there for us when we needed it and allowed us to work towards stability and a better future. This is how the Health Care Access Fund and Minnesota Care works, and it should keep working. Please do your part by preserving the Health Care Access Fund to be used so families like mine can have access to affordable and quality health care. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you both very much. Thank you. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to propose the A-59 amendment.
The A-59 amendment can be passed out. Senator Eaton, maybe you want to, can you want to start while it's being passed out, or should we wait for it?
I can start. This amendment would change the funding to the Health Impact Fund and backfill the Impact Fund from the General Fund as those dollars are available.
Thank you. And Senator Eatman, as you listened to the testimony and heard the concerns of the some of the testifiers, we're trying to broaden the funding stream. It is reliable. Certainly, if you look at the purpose of the health impact fee to help Minnesotans in their effort to get health insurance, it appears to fit within the purpose of the health impact fee, the health impact fund, and I support this amendment. Senator Lori, we have had discussions. Have you a copy of the amendment?
I have a copy of the amendment and the memo from Senate Fiscal on this? So this would just move the funding away from a withhold on plans to the healthcare access, I mean, to the, rather the health impact.
Yes, Senator Lurie,
on tobacco products. Is
what the proposal is doing is removing the funding from the 3.5% withholds to the health impact fund. The purpose of that fund is to recover state health costs related to or caused by tobacco use and to other things to help Minnesotans get access to health care. It seems to fit very well. The fund is currently being deposited into the general fund. There is a mechanism that any surplus dollars would have gone into the health care access fund, but it does not achieve that. And so while as we move through the session, we will have some discussions about replacing these dollars in the general fund. I think for today, this is a better funding mechanism for you as you go off to the Finance Committee and to Conference Committee. And I would ask for questions from the members. Senator Thompson, but he doesn't have them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, obviously this is no minor amendment. This is a significant change to the legislation in front of us. The purpose of this fee is to recover the state health costs related to or caused by tobacco use. So if you look specifically at the statute that was passed, that's in the summary that we received pertaining to what this fund is supposed to be used for, a pretty good argument can be made that this is a diversion of funds in violation of the statute. Secondly, frankly, Mr. Chairman and members, without knowing more specifically about the access fund, what is in there, what kind of revenue stream it has, all of these things, it's impossible to assess this. So I would move that we lay this on the table along with laying the bill on the table and give members an opportunity to understand this, because I don't think it's possible to do that in the few minutes that we would have to argue this amendment and vote on it.
Mr. Chairman.
Non-debatable.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bach,
Masons provides no provision under which an amendment can be laid on the table. So the motion to lay the amendment on the table is out of order.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I stated it incorrectly. Let's lay the bill on the table. I said the amendment along with the bill and come back at a later time. I don't know how any member could understand the implications of this without some time to look at it.
Well, Senator,
and I'd request a vote on my non-debatable motion.
Senator Thompson, can we deal with the amendment? And then your motion will be to lay the bill on the table if the amendment is adopted.
No, I don't know. Mr. Chairman, I don't even know how I want to vote on the amendment. I don't understand enough about the funding source, the access, none of that, to even know how I should represent the citizens of Minnesota and my constituents to vote on the amendment. So I'm asking to
Mr. Chairman, the member is debating his own motion. He made a motion to lay the bill on the table. We need to take a vote.
And I request a roll call.
Roll call being requested. Roll call granted.
So, Mr. Chairman, the amendment was never moved?
Well, I'm a little uncertain how we're going to deal with this because the amendment is in front of
us. It's in front of us.
Senator Eaton moved the amendment. I think we need to resolve the amendment before we make the tabling motion.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Thompson.
Could staff let me know? I don't know if that's a higher motion or not to lay the bill on the table.
Not when an amendment. You cannot. Not when an amendment is on the table.
Senator Eaton, perhaps you would withdraw your amendment so we can vote on the motion to table the bill, and then we will come back to the amendment if the bill is not tabled.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my amendment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I renew my motion to lay the bill on the table.
Roll call vote is being requested on a motion to lay the bill on the table. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Scoy.
No.
Senator Bach.
No.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Dietzick.
No.
Senator Eaton.
No.
Senator Coonan.
No.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Ortman. Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest.
No.
Senator Sinjum.
Absent.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
The vote being eight opposed and three in favor, the motion does not prevail. Senator Eaton, you want to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A59 amendment.
And members, I misspoke in my earlier comments. In the amendment, we are repealing the purpose of the tobacco health impact fee. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
There are a lot of questions here. How would this, if this amendment were adopted, how would this impact the smoking cessation?
Well, Senator Nelson, I think in my discussion I did point out that there is some general fund impact to this action, but I think it's only a general fund impact. Senator Thompson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I would direct this either to Senator Eaton or Senator Lurie. I think that an amendment such as this, I mean, we've just now been listening to a fair amount of testimony about the virtues of doing this through the 3.5% tax, and now all of a sudden we're flipping to this other mechanism. I really think that either the bill's author or the amendment, the offeror of the amendment, really needs to explain how this fund works, how the revenue gets in there, how much is in there now, what is the anticipated cash flow in the future, will the revenue be there to support the healthcare exchange. As I understand it, and I haven't even had time to, you know, fully digest the amendment, if I understood Senator Eaton's comments, if the funds are inadequate to fund the exchange, we will then go to the general fund. We need a detailed explanation of this. It's a major change in the funding mechanism of this bill.
And Senator Thompson, I think if I would refer you to the handout that's in front of you, Minnesota Department of Human Services talks about the dollars going into the general fund, the certification methodology. On the back is the spreadsheet explaining this. I think I would ask you to review that. Senator Eaton, do you have anything you want to add to this? Senator Lurie, do you have any comments?
Well, you know, I am just reading it too. I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward, the mechanism of it. It's a fairly short amendment, and it looks like it would meet the sustainability and sufficiency criteria that we were talking about in most of this testimony. I mean, I still like to withhold quite a bit, but this meets a lot of the principles that we were discussing through that. I think, you know, I see the Commissioner of Management and Budget here might have more insights into how it all works out, but it does seem pretty straightforward. And the 3.5, you know, the withhold that we had was pretty straightforward too. I mean, the fact of the matter is we got an exchange. It's a complicated thing. We got to fund it. A 3.5% withhold up to, it's pretty straightforward. This is also pretty straightforward. It's, you know, I would think that you could weigh the benefits of each and get through this.
And members, we did listen to a fair amount of testimony earlier in this meeting about the concerns of the 3.5%. We're trying to address some of those concerns. I hope that everybody would take into account that we in Minnesota are going to try to do as much as we can to keep health insurance premiums from rising any more than they already are. Did Commissioner Showalter, did you want to say a few words? Commissioner Showalter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Management and Budget. Appreciate the chance to come in and comment on the amendment that is before you. I look forward to continue working on this bill. It's obviously a very important bill, very important to the administration that we get it right. That being said, I would oppose the change that's being considered here. I think it in a couple of reasons. For a very simple reason, it is really a general fund resource that's being used to support the exchange. And so it is opening up a set of issues for the general budget by taking the withhold and the self-supporting mechanism of the exchange and moving it to the general fund. But that being said, I think what's more important to me right now is that the exchange has some incentive to do what it's constructed to do, and that is sell insurance. And what the withhold mechanism did was really aligned those two things together, that the revenue stream supporting the operations of the exchange came from its success in selling insurance to individuals and small businesses. Without that, it starts to look more and more like a state agency. It has less ability and incentive to be nimble, and I think that's a critical element as we look for the organizational characteristics of the exchange, the incentives of the exchange in good times and in bad. And so while I understand and appreciate where the committee is going with this amendment, I would recommend thinking through those issues, because even as it appears that the withhold is some would argue a tax, I think it's also really important to also think about the other effects of the exchange. In terms of the health department's comments just the other day on how it will help lower uncompensated care costs that would otherwise be picked up by the marketplace. On the impact on the MCHA population, because they're going to have guaranteed issue and are going to be able to get insurance through the exchange, and the assessment that is already being put on the insured market to support that population. So I think there's a number of pieces at play here, and I hope that the committee takes those into consideration, whether in this amendment or in subsequent discussion.
And thank you, Commissioner. And we did have an opportunity to visit briefly yesterday, and I did express to you my concerns about the 3.5% withhold. We also discussed that this bill is on a timeline that is shorter than the regular legislative session is, and that as we go through the session, we are going to be looking at other ways to reform funding health care and public health care in Minnesota by trying to find some mechanisms to broaden the base and lower the rate for a number of areas. And I would hope that perhaps we will have this continued discussion as we go through the session. But because of the nature of this bill, I would hope that we're able to make this change today. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I think I could intelligently vote on this, I need to know exactly what the Health Impact Fund currently funds. Do we have that somewhere? Do we know the money that is taken out of the Health Impact Fund? What exactly does that fund right now?
Senator Nelson, I believe that the money flows to the general fund. There is a mechanism that if it exceeds a certain percentage of tobacco use dollars, that it could potentially go to the Health Care Access Fund, but that has not occurred, and from the projections that we've seen, it is not projected to occur. But it's general fund money.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Rust,
and the impact fund balance is currently zero because it's all transferred to the general fund.
Anything else, members? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've now heard from the administration, and I would be interested to hear the author's view on this. Are you in favor of this amendment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, as I stated earlier, you know, I've been carrying this bill. I've been through a bunch of committees. I've come to really like the 3.5%, up to 3.5% withhold. Looking at this, it does meet several of the criteria that I've laid out as important to making an exchange that can work for industry and for consumers. You know, there's some that it may not meet perfectly. And I guess what I would have to say is I'm a health guy. I spend my life and my, you know, passion and dedication here working on health policy, not tax policy. You guys are the tax committee, and I would respect your views on this a great deal. So it meets several of the principles. first blush, I'd leave it to the I'd position myself as neutral on this point and be willing to carry it with or without this amendment adopted, and stay true to the wishes of the Senate Tax Committee.
Thank you, Senator Lori. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lori just talked about some of the, he had earlier mentioned the requirements that the funding mechanism had to have, and some other concerns were already brought up. Is this stable going into the future? Is it really adequate, and is it self-sustaining? One could argue, let's say it is adequate because there's a lot of money here. Well, that is a lot of money. Before, in our fiscal note, we're talking about maybe $40 million, $50 million to fund this thing. All of a sudden, the board that's unaccountable to anybody gets to certify cost and not answer to the legislature and say, well, this is how much we need. Well, where does that end? If I read this right, Commissioner Showalter, since $200 million come out of the health impact fund from the tobacco tax and the tobacco fees, and if you could clarify that, but how much are we talking about that is in that fund as a result of this statute in 2005? What's the potential amount that could be transferred over to this exchange by an unaccountable board that would certify the cost?
Senator Chamberlain, the board is regulated by the Department of Commerce. And
right.
And this is the health impact fee. We had a pretty vigorous debate about this a number of years ago when Governor Plenty was instituting this fee.
Well, I understand. I'm not re-debating the statute from years ago. I'm trying to understand, for my purpose and for this state's purpose, how much money is this collecting? And B, subdivision 2A, right? Certified Minnesota insurance operating costs, and the directors of the Minnesota the board get to decide what the costs are. And if I lead through this Senator Lori's bill and what I've heard in testimony and discussions in the last weeks and months, the board is unaccountable. So all of a sudden we go from $40 million from a 3.5% tax on premiums to something that, if I'm correct, over $200 million could be collected from this fund. And if I'm wrong, let me know how much can be pulled out. Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain, besides the Department of Commerce, I think the director plays a role.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's exactly right. As I read it, Subdivision 2A doesn't say that the entire health impact fee gets transferred to the exchange. In fact, it's the operating costs that are certified by the Commissioner of MMB. At least in my experience, the Commissioner of MMB is in close contact with the legislature, and so this is not an open checkbook to the operating cost wishes and wants of the exchange, but in fact would probably yield a closer conversation about what those operating costs are. The amount that would be certified would also, since the commissioner is well aware of the both sides of the ledger, that whatever is transferred out is not being transferred to the general fund.
Mr. Chair,
members, we've had a couple of, or at least one person that testified earlier, request to come back to the table. So, Mr. Hickey, do you want to step up? And Senator Bach, did you have something?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chamberlain, this is not unprecedented. There are a number of places in law where functions get certified. And I just think of a couple examples at DNR. There's an open and standing appropriation for fire suppression in Minnesota. We could spend the entire state budget if we had a bad wildfire in Minnesota, and there's an open standing appropriation where the DNR certifies costs. There's another one over at DNR relative to the permanent school fund where the DNR certifies costs for timber management, and then are allowed to take money out of the permanent school fund based on certified costs. So this is not unprecedented. There are a number of places in law where we allow certification for actual costs incurred.
Mr. Hickey testified earlier in opposition to the 3.5. Do you have an opinion on the proposed amendment?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey with National Federation of Independent Business. I want to thank Senator Eaton for bringing this amendment up, and Mr. Chairman, for your support and for the support of others. This is a really important vote for small business. You know, you have this chart, 12%, 13% versus 2% for the large employers in the ERISA market. More people are going to move toward the ERISA market, probably under the ACA. It's important to relieve this burden from small business. And thank you for bringing this amendment up. And this is an important vote for small business not to make things worse this year to the tune of 3.5%.
Thank you. Anything else, members? Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Showalter, good to see you. As I understand this amendment, by April 30th of each year, the board of directors of the insurance marketplace would present their costs of operations to management and budget. And then the commissioner shall transfer from the health impact fund. So would you have any discretion in that, or is that just a matter of they give you a number and you have to, I mean, it looks to me like what the statute says is you simply pay the money. Is that not correct?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Senator, you know, by my reading of this, it does say the certified operating costs would be provided to the Commissioner of Management and Budget. As the Majority Leader has suggested, this is a parallel to other situations where, yes, those costs can be certified and delivered to the Commissioner of M&B, but it is also a dialogue to understand what those costs are typically before they are finalized.
Follow-up?
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you would know this, and I don't know the answer. Are there any other situations where such an arrangement exists, but it's not coming from an agency that is subject to legislative oversight? In other words, this board is going to be an independent body, not subject to legislative oversight. Does that exist anywhere else?
I'm trying to think. Mr. Chair, I can't think of an instance, although I was initially wondering about the comment that this board isn't subject to legislative oversight, right, simply because it is created by state law. The funding mechanism is clearly associated with the state revenue streams. And so the idea that the legislature will not be aware and concerned with whatever is happening with the exchange is at least a little foreign to me.
Senator Eaton renews her motion that amendment A59.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Chamberlain?
Yeah, just one last comment, and we had an amendment here. I don't know if it would work for this, but I appreciate being able to spread out the cost and relieve the burden on the small businesses. It's just hard to see how we make this thing much better. But if this were to be an amendment and we're going to fund the exchange with this, and this amendment, as Senator Thompson has just pointed out, shall an unaccountable board, we don't know some of these other things, and just because it's been done in the past doesn't mean it's the best practice. And we're talking about potentially hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars at stake, not through through the exchange, but through this whole process. With all these unknowns, is there some way we could cap the amount that the exchange is going to cost, or cap the amount that's turned over, or change the language in this amendment that says prior to the commissioner transferring those funds, they come to the legislature or the subcommittee for review and approval? Can we stick in this amendment somewhere that says before he transfers it, striking shell, he can keep shell, but shell, before the commissioner transfers these funds, he shall come to the legislature for approval of those costs for the exchange.
Well, Senator Chamberlain, as Commissioner Showalter indicated, the legislature does have oversight and authority on general fund. Ms. Pollack, do you have anything to add to this?
Mr. Chair and members, a couple of things. We could relatively easily put a cap into this language here if the committee so wishes. Also, I would bring the committee's attention to some language in Section 16A.1285, which sets forth a policy that says essentially that agencies can't seek to recover more costs than they need. So what the board would be stating as their operational costs under this amendment and what the commissioner would certify would have to fall within the guidelines of this policy.
And Senator Lori, do you have any thoughts on a cap, or are we certain enough of what the potential future ramifications of this are that you would be comfortable with that?
Mr. Chair, you know, one of the federal requirements is that the exchange be self-sustaining. And those interactions are a little unclear to me. I think it might be unwise. This was one of the things that I am a little worried about is aligning incentives with this. And so we will have to continue to watch it, but we will. I mean, I think that Commissioner Showalter's point to Senator Thompson, this is a creature of the legislature. We are creating this board, and it will always come back to us. There's several reports back to us. We're working on oversight of it constantly. It's subject to the Office of the Legislative Auditor. There's an independent audit required every single year of this board that will be made public. There is going to be extensive oversight and continual review. They're not going to be totally unchained from accountability. And we all have a very keen interest in making sure that that is the case. But a cap in an unknown environment is, I don't think it's the best idea.
Thank you. And members, we're gonna start voting on this, as we do have a committee report to accept. Senator Chamberlain, do you have an amendment?
One last point here. I thank you, Mrs. Pollack, for that information. But as we all know, in my short time here, I find that the word need is fairly vague and hard to determine, and the need by an unaccountable board can be very small or very great. We're elected here to represent the citizens of this state in the best fashion we can, and I think putting language in here like this, and I have great respect for Commissioner Showalter, and I know there's these other checks and balances, but we're talking about a major piece of legislation that's going to affect every Minnesotan in some way or another, and it's going to cost a lot of money. And all I'm asking, all the citizens are asking, all my constituents would require is that the commissioner, after he receives the information from the board, that he come forth with that information before a committee and have that approved by an elected board and not simply passed on. Because this language, a lot of attorneys in this room, they can cut and slice and dice this many different ways to get it the way they want it. So I think a protection would be simply to bring it in front of a subcommittee, a task force appointed by the legislature, part of a permanent standing committee would be appropriate before this money is transferred over.
Then they
can determine the need.
Thank you for those comments. And no amendments. Senator Thomas? Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, of course, is not a good choice for some of us in terms of whether to vote for this amendment or not. But I do tend to think that it does make sense to make the funding of this somewhat contingent upon its success. And at least the 3.5% fee does that. In other words, if insurance companies don't get involved and people aren't paying premiums within the exchange, the funding mechanism is not going to work. So there's some internal control that the continued existence of the exchange will be dependent upon success. The second thing is a tobacco tax is one of the most regressive taxes that exists. So essentially what this tobacco fee, this health impact fee diversion over there would be doing is asking for lower and lower middle income people to pay for the insurance product that presumably is going to lower their costs, which makes no sense to me. So, you know, I'll be voting against it, but I want it on record. I certainly don't. It's not because I believe the 3.5% fee is a way to go either.
Well, Senator Thompson, Governor Plenty's health impact fee is in place, and we're just utilizing it. Senator Rest.
Roll call, please.
Roll call being requested.
Mr. Chair.
I do.
Two more comments.
Senator Senjum.
Senator Chamberlain and I are probably on the same wavelength here. Members, I would simply like on line 1.11, after the word shall, to offer a oral amendment, and that would be upon concurrence of the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
1.11?
Would you repeat that, please, Senator?
Yes, line 1.11, after the word shall, upon concurrence of the Legislative Coordinating Commission. In other words, there would be a one-stop decision amongst basically the legislative leadership who comprise that decision or that commission to agree upon what the certified amount is.
And Senator Senjum, former majority leader, how often does that group meet?
Is this it's at the call of the chair, but I think it would be fairly easily done.
Any time that they needed to be met?
Sure.
Well, Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, the problem is these are certified costs, which means that the costs have actually been incurred and the money expended. And what if the LCC then decided, well, we're just not going to reimburse the costs? I mean, the exchange essentially falls apart because the money that has been expended is not going to be reimbursed. So I understand the intent, Senator Senjum. I just don't think it functions very well because you're asking for the oversight after the money's already been spent.
All right. Mr. Chair, I just place and I know you do too, Senator Bach. I think if that were the case, I think the legislature is going to agree with that, or at least that those commission members. I just think this provides a tone of oversight that's important, and it's a fairly soft, I think, ask.
Do you offer that amendment?
Yes.
Senator Senjum offers the oral amendment. Everybody clear? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same
no.
sign. Motion does not prevail.
Roll call.
You can ask for a division.
Division.
Division, I'm sorry.
Everybody in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Motion does not prevail. 4, support, 8 against. Senator Eaton renews her motion that the A59 amendment be recommended to pass. Roll call being requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Scoy?
Yes.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Dietzick?
Yes.
Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Coonan?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Ortman?
Absent.
Senator Reinert?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
By a vote of 7-5, the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate File 1 as amended in front of us.
Chair.
Any final comments, Senator Laurie?
Mr. Chairman?
Nope. Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File Number 1, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Rest has moved that Senate File 1, as amended, be recommended to pass, referred to the Committee on Finance. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would request a roll call on the vote. One question I have is we understand that there's this compulsion to really move this. And every committee that I've sat in, we can't ask questions about that. We can't talk about that. We can't do that, whether it was state government or here. Now we are voting, presumably soon, on a bill that has completely changed in its nature. What has changed is the tax structure, the funding structure, which should be the subject of this committee. There should be another hearing on this after members have an opportunity to understand the implications of it. So I would ask the chair to leave us another. We reserved, I believe, tomorrow in case this debate continues. I would ask the opportunity to come back tomorrow and talk about it. I believe that's only reasonable. But short of that, since if I understood Senator Laurie correctly, and please correct me if I mischaracterize this, he's a little bit ambivalent regarding the funding mechanism. So my assumption is this could change again along the way. So my question to you is, if this funding mechanism changes, since the funding mechanism is within the direct purview of the tax committee, will you ask to get this bill back here and put it in front of the committee again if there's another change to the funding mechanism?
My expectation, Senator Thompson, is that Senator Lurie is going to work hard to maintain the provisions that the Senate Tax Committee has adopted.
Mr. Chairman,
can I respond to the initial statements? I mean, Senator Thompson, as the chief author of this bill, I have to tell you, we have had incredibly long and thorough conversations and wide-reaching conversations at every single committee stop I've been to. And this is, I believe, committee number 5 of 9 that I need to go to. And that's good. I mean, honestly, we really want to get this right. We want to make sure that this health insurance exchange can work for industry and for consumers. And that's been my guiding principle the entire time. But the implication that we've stifled debate is something that I need to correct on the record, because any committee that wanted more time, we spent more time. We've come back in the evening several times and finished up debates that we weren't able to accomplish. We've had very, very thorough conversations about this. This is a significant change, but it's one that's actually fairly easy to comprehend. I mean, the nuts and bolts of the exchange and how it functions are laid out in the balance of the bill. This is to the question of how we pay for it. The amendment that we just adopted changed it from a withhold to the health impact fee. It's pretty straightforward what was adopted, and so I need to just make sure that characterization is proper.
Thank you, Senator Lurie. And Senator Thompson has paid attention to the agenda. We do have another bill on the agenda today that doesn't look like we're going to get to. We've had a pretty thorough discussion of Senate File 1 and the funding mechanisms. So I would hope that we could vote on Senate File 1, and then we'll accept the committee report, but we'll have to lay that Senate File 119 on the table after we accept the report. Senator Thompson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I would argue that we've had virtually no vetting of the change in this proposal. We've not had witnesses but for Mr. Hickey, who was already in the room. I don't know who else out there may want to testify on this that's not even here or available today. And Senator Lurie, I obviously can't speak to the House. I don't know how the committee hearings have gone over there. I've not been in them. But this is the second committee I've participated in. And the first committee I was on was the State Government Committee that was the original committee to hear it. And I learned when I came up here last year from the then minority that the importance of the first committee is anything's on the table. Anything can be talked. And yet Chair Pappas made clear we're only going to stick to the state government components of it. So, and now we are literally going to have no discussion. You say that this health impact fee is easy to understand. I get it. I understand where the money will come from. It'll come from low and middle income people. I get that. But I certainly don't know enough about how the money flows, the inflows, outflows, what it's going to mean for the health care exchange. Again, this is not getting vetted. It's getting pushed. And that's unfortunate, because we are now going to have a 7-member panel. All you need is 4 people that are going to control the health care decisions, the doctors people get to see,
Senator
the insurance
Thompson,
companies from which
straying?
They get to buy insurance, and we're not vetting. It's wrong.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Any final words, Senator Lurie?
No.
Clerk will call. Senator Eaton renews her motion. Senate File 1 be recommended. Senator Rest's motion. Senate File 1 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. As amended. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Scoy?
Yes.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Dietzick?
Yes.
Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Hoonan?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
Yep.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Ortman? Senator Reinert?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Sinjum?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
On a vote of 8 affirmative and 4 in the negative, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and referred to the Finance Committee.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Members, I would like to accept the committee report from the Division on Senate File 119. Senator Rest, did you want to make a few comments?
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the division report regarding Senate File 119.
Members, did you hear that? Senator Rest and the division has been working on a federal conformity bill. There's a number of provisions that were adopted in the division dealing with provisions in last year's vetoed tax bill. But session starts at 11. We're not going to have time to go through that today. So we will vote on the adoption of the report unless you have questions. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Report's adopted.
Session 11.
Yeah. Anything else? Yeah. When are we meeting?
We need a meeting.
Perfect timing.
We're not going to meet tomorrow.
No, we're not meeting tomorrow. Do you want to talk about next week?
We will.
When are we meeting?
This is just a first.
Members, I think we're going to be meeting next Thursday, but Committee Administrator O'Rourke will get the information and agenda to you. The division has Tuesday and Wednesday already scheduled, so Thursday would be our earliest time period. Anything else? Thank you, members. Committee's adjourned.